to the gap, and that'll do it.
That will do it. Salvador Perez with a walk-off single to score the game-winning run for the Kansas City Royals there on Tuesday night, starting a three-game series with the Houston Astros, and the Royals pick up a 4-3 win in 10. Well, much more on that coming up here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94, and we welcome you in here on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com, as always, to the Sports Ticket. As the Royals, again, five straight wins. We're going to have some numbers that might surprise you a little bit about this Royals team and this five-game winning streak that they're on right now. A 7-4 start for Kansas City. Again, more on that coming up here on the Sports Ticket. We also look at, we'll have some local results that we'll pass along here momentarily, but also another Athlete of the Week honor for a local high jumper from Beloit that's competing at Wichita State. We've been talking about him a lot, and he continues to excel at the collegiate level, and then there are a couple things that happened in the NBA last night that were interesting. Well, I should say one was interesting and one was possibly some bad news, but we'll get to that as well. And we will also have K-State in focus, and a college basketball legend is retiring. It's all, or has retired, actually. It's all coming up here on the Sports Ticket. But first, I want to pass along some local information and a lot of activity taking place on Tuesday in the area. There were some big baseball games there in Clay Center with Beloit at Clay Center. Beloit was ranked number 9 in Class 3A going into that doubleheader. Clay Center number 1 in Class 4A. Beloit was a little bit shorthanded, as we talked about yesterday, but Clay Center, a very, very good team, and they get the sweep. They win the first game 14-0 in five innings and took game 2 11-0 in five innings. So Clay Center 10-0 on the season, Beloit dropping to 5-3 with those two losses, but obviously playing Clay Center is a chance for you to understand where you're at and learn from it. So again, that is baseball yesterday. Also, Russell Soap and Lucas Lincoln competing in Lucas. Russell getting the sweep there, 11-0 in six innings in the first game, and they fought for the second game, but Russell came away with a 10-8 win in eight. Wamego over Concordia in a sweep, 4-3-9 in the first game, and 7-2 in game 2 for the Red Raiders. In softball, Beloit splitting with Clay Center Wakefield, winning the first game 10-8 and losing the second 8-0. Beloit now 7-1 on the season on the softball diamond. And in the NCKL, Wamego sweeping Concordia 11-0 in 6 in game 1 and taking the second game 9-2. Track and field yesterday, a great day for the Beloit Lady Trojans. They finished first place with a 181 total score. That was 98 points better than second place Marysville with 83. Individual gold medal winners from the area: Ashley Nada Beloit in the 100 and 200, Madison Howland of Smith Center in the 1600 and 3200. Scarlett Lundwig of Beloit took first in the 100 and 300 meter hurdles. Also, 4x1 went to Beloit. The 4x1 weight relay to St. John's. Ashlyn Schultz of Osborne, a career best in the high jump at 5'4", taking first place. Ashlyn Loomis of Beloit won the pole vault, and the discus and shot put gold medals going both of those to Tatum Seifert of Beloit on Tuesday. Boys team wise, Osborne was second place with 68. Phillipsburg actually won the meet with 94. Individual gold medal winners from the area: Mason Baker in the 400 meter dash for Thunder Ridge, Gavin Hickert of Smith Center in the 3200 meter run. 300 meter hurdles go to Sam Kendig of Osborne. 4x1, Osborne takes first place. They also won the 4x8, 4x1 weight relay to Beloit. Dante Peterson of Southern Cloud won the high jump, and the shot put gold medal going to Eli Johnson on Tuesday. Stockton Invitational, girls team-wise, a first-place finish for Sylvan Lucas. Cody Hill of Sylvan Lucas took first place, gold medal in the 400 and 800. Also for the Lady Mustangs, a gold medal for Maggie Labertu in the long jump. Emily Cheek in the triple jump took first place. Lauren Brummett brought home 2 gold medals for Lakeside, and she set a new school record and personal record of 5'2¼" in the high jump to take first place. And she also won the javelin for Lakeside as well. A gold medal there for Lauren. Boys set up things. All the medalists were from Sylvan Lucas, who finished second place as a team. Isaac Schulmeister was in first in the 100-meter dash. Carter Johnson won the 800. Sylvan Lucas winning the 4x1 and 4x4. And Zane Maupin of the Mustangs finishing in the gold with the long jump. Golf. Osborne Invitational on Tuesday. Hill City first place. Osborne was fourth. Individually, Noah Fry of Hill City had a 78 and won the tournament. 9 strokes ahead of a 9th place finish for Dawson Lance of Osborne. He was our only local top 10 finisher there in Osborne on Tuesday. Beloit taking home the team championship of the Minneapolis Invitational with a 392. Jennings Sloan, a first place individual gold medal with an 82 for Beloit. Luke Cheney finished in 4th. Jackson Cheney 6th. And the Chapman Invitational on Tuesday, Concordia took the team championship as well. You can find full results for all of those events. If you missed it, they're posted at ncksports.com. So that's a look at what happened in yesterday's high school sports action. Again, you're on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. You can find them south of Courthouse in Beloit. They're your home team for fast and friendly auto repair. All right, one other local note for the second straight week. Beloit native and St. John's grad Brady Pollin has been named the American Athletic Conference Field Athlete of the Week for Wichita State. He won the high jump at the Arkansas Spring Invitational last weekend, a jump of 2.20 meters or 7.25. The mark is tied for fourth in the NCAA, leads the AAC by 9 centimeters. He's jumped over 7 feet 19 times in his career now. And you can read much more about Brady and what he was able to accomplish there at GoShockers.com. So that updates you on all the local sports going on in the air. If you ever have any questions or want to see the schedules, standings, scores, as we get results, we post them. Sometimes we don't get those. And if I don't have them, I can't post them. We can't post them at ncksports.com. But everything we do get, we try to update timely. ncksports.com is your home for high school sports here in North Central Kansas. All right, we shift our attention now. Actually, we'll do this and then get into the Royals. K-State in Focus coming up.
It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit.
All right, an update on K-State sports as the baseball team is in action right now and continuing on with their season. The Wildcats have Wichita State actually coming to town tonight. If you're wanting to see the squad and see how they're looking, 20-10 now. They started off pretty hot for the most part. They did have a three-game weekend series with UCF that they went 1-2 and they lost first game 7-4 last Friday, and then on Saturday they won 4-3 before losing 6-1 on Sunday. And Wichita State again coming into town tonight at 6 p.m. first pitch from Toyton Family Stadium there in Manhattan. Catch it on ESPN Plus. Again, K-State 20-10 overall, and they are now 7-5 in the Big 12. So, again, Wichita State coming up tonight for the Wildcats, and then they have a weekend series on the road against Oklahoma, Friday at 6:30, Saturday at 4, Sunday at 2, and then they'll have UConn coming up next Tuesday as they'll go to Storrs, Connecticut, and then they go to Northeastern out there in Boston next Wednesday. So, interesting road trip coming up here for the K-State baseball team. All of that ahead of a weekend series next weekend against Oklahoma State, April 19th through 21st. So that's a look at what's going on with K-State baseball. Obviously, the transfer portal is what we're looking at. Also, for men's hoops, a lot of talk has been about Jerome Tang. Would he go anywhere? You know, there's talk about right now that Scott Drew might be on the list at Kentucky and would leave Baylor, and so then everybody goes back into that panic mode that I've never understood for the most part. I will say, if Scott Drew leaves Baylor, we talked a little bit about this earlier. I can't remember if it was yesterday or the day before on Monday, but we talked about this a little bit. And I think Baylor would be like the one place that would concern me the most at this point. But I don't know. Jerome Tang, here's one thing that people leave out about these kind of things, and I was discussing this with some people yesterday, and it's like the one thing that's left out about this is that, you know, every time something comes up like this, and in this case, Baylor for Jerome Tang, which he was an assistant coach at Baylor with Scott Drew for 18 years, and then last year was his first year, or the last 2 years have been his first two without being on Scott Drew's staff as he's coached K-State. Made the Elite Eight run in the first year, and then this past year losing the first round of the NIT. But, you know, I think stock went down just a little bit this year for Jerome Tang, not a lot, because he's still a commodity that I think some people would want other than just K-State. But, you know, Baylor is the place that everybody would be concerned about, and I understand that he spent so much time at Baylor. But the thing about Baylor is, and this is what I said, I'm pretty sure it was Monday, but you know, the thing that ties Scott Drew to Baylor, excuse me, Jerome Tang to Baylor is Scott Drew. And for me, I just feel like Jerome Tang is a relationship guy. And he gives that vibe of he cares about people and wants to be connected with people. Not necessarily university. He's connected with Kansas State. He loves K-State. You can tell that with the energy that he exudes about the university. And, you know, part of that is because he is employed by the university and it looks good. But I think there's a lot of it that's genuine. And he really does love Kansas State. And so that's one thing that I don't think people really are focusing a lot on is Gene Taylor gave him a chance at K-State to be a head coach. And he took that chance. And this was the opportunity that he felt was the best one that fit him. And you can't tell me that he didn't have other opportunities in those 18 years to go somewhere other than K-State to be a head coach. But, you know, you move out, you get a job at a Power 5 school or Power 6, if you want to call it that, in basketball, whatever that may be. But he took the job there. And I just don't – even if Scott Drew would end up going to Kentucky, I still would not lean toward Jerome Tang going back to Baylor because Scott Drew's not there. Now, the thing that we talked about earlier this week is if Scott Drew gets on the phone with Jerome Tang and says, hey, buddy, you're the guy to keep this program going. I need you there. I need you to keep the legacy that we built. But at the same time, and I, you know, financially, I don't know what the difference is going to be for Scott Drew should he go to Kentucky instead of being at Baylor. At the same time, it's like, well, if you're that worried about it, why are you leaving it? But it's the same situation as anybody that would be leaving to better their situation for themselves or their family or whatever that might be, right? And so you're gonna take advantage of that. But at the same time, if I'm Jerome Tang, I'm like, well, if you're so worried about it, why don't you just go ahead and keep it together? I've got my own thing going here in Manhattan at K-State, and that's where I'm at. That's the thing that I'm focusing on is I think people, when a job like this comes up, and I got to look this up because I don't want to speak out of turn, but I'm pretty sure I'm correct here when I say what I'm about to say. But when a job comes up and somebody has ties to it, it's just automatically people think, oh, well, that's he's going to leave for that job. That's the job that he probably wants. That's where he's going to go. One of the things that you can look at is, you know, like a Bob Huggins, right? The West Virginia job came up. That was his alma mater. That's where he went to school. That's where he's from. That's where his ties are connected to his whole life. Jerome Tang was born in Trinidad and Tobago. Charter Oak State, an online college, is Jerome Tang's alma mater. You get what I'm saying here? There's things that can connect you to places. And I feel like the connection to Baylor is Scott Drew for Jerome Tang. Now, I'm sure he loves the green and gold there. He loves Baylor. He loves Waco. I'm sure that he loved all of that part of his time there. But the absolute main connection, because of what I think about Jerome Tang, is that he's a people person. He's a relationship person. The absolute connection is Scott Drew. And Scott Drew won't be there anymore. So that's, for me, would be the one thing, though, that could lead him to go somewhere else is Baylor. And if Scott Drew begs him to do it, if he says, hey, you're the one that I need to go take this over and continue it down there in Waco while I have a chance to do something better for myself and my family, whatever that might be, right? So the panic will start if Scott Drew does go to Kentucky and if or wherever he would go if he would leave Baylor. The panic will start with K-State fans yet again, and I will be sitting in the back and saying, what are you panicking about? Because I, even in that situation, now that's a gut feeling, that's nothing I know, right? That even in that situation, I don't think Tang would go anywhere. We'll see how that all plays out. One person I can tell you that's not going anywhere is Ayoka Lee. She's back with a COVID year and a chance to help lead K-State. They're you know, one of 10 to 12 teams that will be kind of looked at for a possibility to make a run again in the tournament. You know, things got a little bit derailed with K-State this year after Lee went down with the injury. They just never were the same team. after she broke her foot and her ankle and played one game on it against Texas, and they picked up a win against a very good team at Bramlage Coliseum. But then, you know, they fought 2 days later at Baylor to get a win on the road. But, you know, there were some struggles, some games where they barely got through and actually did pick up wins. But credit them, that makes them a team that was very, very good, but they just never got to the same form. And Aoka was never healthy really all season long, but they never really got to the form that they wanted to be at to be able to have the success that they wanted to in the tournament. So, Aoka Lee is coming back, though. So the thing you want is for her to be healthy, and that's for a full year. Again, she missed the entire season, 2022-23, after a surgery on her knee, and you know missed a lot of last season, too, because of the foot injury. So that's the good news for K-State today. Aoka Lee is returning for 2024-25. She's all-time leading rebounder. She leads K-State in points per game all-time at over 19. And, she's obviously, if she is healthy and plays, she will probably, in the non-conference, set the all-time scoring record at K-State coming up next year. So, again, that's predicated on if she stays healthy and can be able to play. So, again, she does rank third right now all-time in points, and again, just under 2,200, 2,194, and she does hold the school record for career scoring average, as I mentioned, at 19.2, career rebound record at 1,118, and the record for rebounding average at just under 10 a game, and the record holder with career blocks at 310 and blocks per game at 2.7, and career double-doubles at 60. Again, first player in program history with 300 more career blocks, 100 more career steals. Has all-time record for single game scoring in a game with 61 against Oklahoma a few years back. And so Aoka Lee coming back to K-State to be a part of this Wildcat program. Our focus on K-State athletics today brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction and Realty in Beloit. Take another break. When we come back, break up the Royals. They are hot.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. When your vehicle has a problem or needs maintenance, Kiever Brothers is your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Whether you need tires, brakes, batteries, belts, hoses, air conditioning, a transmission, engine, or just an oil change, there's only one thing you need to remember. We fix everything. Kiever Brothers Automotive delivers fast, friendly auto repair, and we fix everything. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit and online at KieferBrothers.com.
The guys were hanging in there. They were putting together some pretty good at-bats. I thought we swung the bat, drove the ball around the field a little bit with nothing to show for it. And then the sac fly and Bobby's triple were huge. And then Vinny getting a ball in play, awkward spin in there, made it a tough play for Bregman. So, and both, they ran some good relievers out there. And there's tough at-bats. We had a couple chances that we didn't capitalize on, but overall, just staying with it. I mean, I was really happy that Salvi did it, quickly. A lot of stuff that you don't have to try to figure out from then on out.
Matt Couture, the manager of the Royals, as they win 4-3 in extras, 10 innings against the Astros. First game of three there on Tuesday at Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City. So a big win there for the Royals. And they won 5 in a row and are hot after that. More on that coming up here in a moment. But just kind of look at the Royals game there last night. The Astros, Christian Javier was hot to start the season. He had 11 scoreless innings coming into the game. Was 1-0 on the season. And then gave up his first runs not until the fifth inning last night. The Astros took a 3-0 lead. They got one in the first, one in the second, another in the fourth, and led 3-0 going into the bottom of the fifth when the Royals finally got some things going, scratched out three runs, a sack fly by Michael Garcia, a triple by Bobby Witt Jr., and Witt Jr. would score on an error, on a throwing error by Alex Bregman. As Manny Pasquantino was safe at first, and Witt scored to tie the game at 3. And Christian Javier gave up his first runs of the season. He gave up 2 earned, 3 total, 5 hits, 4 strikeouts, did have 3 walks, 5 and a third inning, got a no decision. As did Cole Reagans. It was probably his worst start of the season. His ERA is now up to 2.60, giving up 3 runs and 10 hits, a walk, and 5 strikeouts. Boy, if you're the Astros, you really got to feel like you left some stuff out there. And they did. had 13 left on base. They had 14 hits. They out-hit the Royals 14-7. Left 13 on base, had multiple opportunities to score, including in the 10th inning. It was a – here's why you sign a guy like Bobby Witt Jr. Obviously, you sign him for his bat. But when you get a guy like Bobby Witt Jr., who's a five-tool player, there are so many examples in a game that you can figure out why you want to hold on to that guy and why you want to give him that long-term contract, which I'm still a little bit surprised about that they were able to get that done and lock him up for at least the next 7 years, a possibility of an 11-year contract but or contract extension. But he just makes so many plays and makes some of it look a lot easier than what it anybody could even dream of being, right? The triple was huge in the fifth to get another run in. I got a hold of a pitch that was kind of left up and out, and he pushed it into the gap in right center, and it ended up going off the bottom of the wall, and there was some confusion in the outfield as to who was going to pick it up. They ended up getting it. He gets three out of it and gets an RBI triple to score Hunter Renfro, and the speed that he has is unreal once he hits the base paths. And or the base path, whatever, but he is just so fast and quick. And the quickness that he shows with his glove came into play there on Tuesday night, last night in the 10th inning. You know, you get the courtesy runner. The courtesy runner was at second, had a couple outs, and then in the 10th there. And it wasn't a ground out. It was a single, but a big-time play by Bobby Witt Jr. there. With two outs, it was Pena that was at the plate, Jeremy Pena. He hits a grounder that looks – I mean, a lot of guys, this grounder is going to go through the shortstop and third baseman and on into left field. On into right field, excuse me. I do know my baseball diamond. Left field, I was right. I do know my baseball diamond. Anyway, this swing from Pena would go through a lot of shortstops and third basemen on into left field. This one, however, did not. Bobby Witt Jr. was able to dive at it and keep it on the ground. The runner did advance from second to third, but if that gets through, the Royals are down 4-3 with two outs in the ninth and need to get one more out. Which James McArthur, by the way, was very good. He did give up that just that one hit, struck out two innings of relief to get the win for the first time this year. He's 1-0. But that play, just diving back and covering that ground, it was back and toward left field a little bit. Bobby got the stop. He tried to make a throw. I was like, if he can make this throw and get him out, this is obviously a top 10 play, and it is total insanity. But he didn't make the throw, which who's going to? I mean, he's on his side and then on his stomach and then has to roll over and try to throw the ball to first base from deep short on the grass, right? Heading toward left field, not heading toward the first base side of the field. So that'd have been insane if he'd done that, but saved the game for him. And they ended up getting the next out. And then in the top of the 10th, Garrett Hampson scores on the single by Salvi Perez on the second pitch of the bottom of the 10th, and boom, game's over. You got a walk off, you got a win, you got your fifth in a row. Royals are 6-2 at home. They had the 4-game sweep against the White Sox, and they had the win as well last night against the Astros. So again, the Royals are playing very, very good baseball right now. You know, we said at the beginning of the year there's reason for optimism with this team, and you can see that obviously with the starting pitching. The bullpen was terrible for a little bit, but even with that game last night, Cole Reagan struggled. It wasn't his night. 10 hits, 3 runs, had a walk. But you know what the Royals did? The bullpen came through, which was the Achilles heel early in the season. Right through the first week, we're like, what's wrong with this bullpen? Why can they not get outs? And they've moved McArthur to closer, Smith to setup man. And I don't know if that shift in roles has just changed their approach or what they think about when they're entering the game and trying to hold leads and things, or just trying to hold a tie last night for the most part, once they got it tied at 3 in the fifth, and that's what they were doing. But It's wild that something that was a big problem in the first week has now become an advantage for the Royals. They have 16 straight scoreless innings from their bullpen, which we were saying was not very good, and they weren't very good in the first week of the season. How things can change when you take on a team that is now 2-7, the White Sox, after a win since being swept by the Royals. But, man, things can change so fast, and you know, I'm not the baseball guy, but this is why we always say, as far as my favorite sport, obviously I know about baseball, and I know my diamond, right? Like I said, but the thing is, things change, and it's a marathon, not a sprint. That's what we always say, and what everybody says about baseball. It's really true for almost every sport, even football at some points, but it's still more of a sprint than any other sport, as far as professional is concerned, that we kind of follow as far as the Big Four. But again, this is what it is, and things can change on a team on a daily basis sometimes, but definitely on a weekly basis and a monthly basis for sure. The Royals, again, 16 straight scoreless innings from their bullpen, which is something we wouldn't have expected after the first week of the season, but that's why you keep playing the games. That's why you continue to grow as a team, and that's what the Royals have done here through the first 11. The Royals have won 5 in a row. It's April 9th when they did that. Today's April 10th. Last year, they didn't even win 3 in a row until July 30th. What time? 5 in a row is what they've won right now. They didn't win 3 in a row and have an actual winning streak last year until July 30th. Randy Gisarelli always has those notes, but on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. But this team is obviously off to a very good start. Now, a lot of people, you start winning, and you're a little bit better maybe than you thought you'd be at this point, especially after starting the season. You know, think about on a 6-game winning streak. That means they were 1-4 to start the season. And now you've gone 5 in a row. They're 2-4, excuse me, to start the season. You've gone 5 in a row. I decided to add an extra game. Maybe I'm projecting and predicting what's going to happen tonight. But you start 2-4, 5 in a row. You're now 7-4, and now people are going to start jumping on the other side of that. Oh, look how good this team is. How many games can we win? We're 63% win percentage. We're winning, winning, winning. And listen, I'm excited about it as everybody is. I'm just as excited about it. This is fun to watch. They're a team that's young, a team that doesn't quit, that don't give up. You know, there have been plenty of Royals teams in the past that down 3-0 in the fifth inning, maybe wouldn't have the thought process of we can actually win this game. Some of the bad teams for sure. Now, the good teams and probably even last year's team, I don't think really had a lot of give up in them. They just didn't have the talent and they had just atrocious pitching. So a lot of those things were kind of out of the players' hands as far as batting and offense was concerned because the pitching was so bad. But I do love this team, and I love their fight, and I love that they're not giving up, and they're not going to. They've got a young nucleus that's playing very, very well. Bobby Witt Jr. is, you know, I'd say living up to the hype of who he is and what he is as an all-around baseball player, the five-tool player that can do virtually everything you need him to do, right field. He can hit. He can throw. He can do all those things, run the bases. He's got speed, all the tools that you need. Bobby Witt Jr. has him to play this game at a very, very high level, and that's been evident, and it will continue to be the case, right? And I saw him play one game in the minor leagues at Northwest Arkansas when I went down to Wichita to watch him play, and I could tell just by that day and that game that he was different, and that this is a dude right here, as Jerome Tang would say, right? And you knew it right away, just from me seeing him in person once. And he did not last at AA very long at all before he was at AAA to finish out the season, and the next year he's already on the big league club. So this guy is definitely a generational talent for the Royals. It's not for baseball, probably. I mean, guys like this come around. You get your Mike Trouts, you get your Bryce Harpers, you get these guys that are studs. Shohei Ohtani would be above everybody from that aspect. But you do get your guys, and you understand that there's a lot. I'm going to say there's a lot. These guys don't grow on trees, but when you say generational talent, you're usually talking about this is the dude. For the Royals, it's generational talent. They've not had a guy like this, hype like this, for quite a while. And a guy that's lived up to this hype for a very, very long time as well. And Bobby Witt Jr. is the nucleus. He's the face of what the Royals are doing right now with this young group. And the pitching staff has done a really good job this year. And again, they're 7-4. And again, I'm enjoying it. I'm excited about it. Don't raise your expectations too high. Don't fall into a trap of, oh, this team winning the division. Book it. They're playing so well. They're never going to lose again. They've won 5 in a row. First of all, 4 of their wins in that 5-game winning streak have come to the White Sox, who were 1-7 after that series was over, and who we were making fun of at the beginning of the year because they've assembled a team with a bunch of different names that have been with the Royals in the past and not the good ones. Well, some of the good ones, but that are nowhere near what they were when they were good ones for the Royals. I don't know if you know this, but it's been 9 years since the Royals won the World Series. And one of the players on the White Sox team is one of those Royals players that has just not had a lot of success, as Mike Moustakas was part of that. I don't even know if he made the team. I haven't really paid that much attention. I did not get a chance to watch any of the games against the White Sox because I was busy with family over the weekend. So just temper it. Like, temper the expectations. Don't sit here and think, oh, we've got a AL Central Championship. This is what we're going to do this year. We are division champs. Book it. Lock it up. And I don't think a lot of people are actually doing that right now, but there's a lot of excitement around this team, and there are a lot of people saying things about this team, you know, with exclamation points. A week ago, you were not saying that. You're like, oh my goodness, we got to finish things off. We got to finish games. We got to get wins here. Realistically, the Royals could be 9-2 right now, and probably should be 9-2. But they're 7-4. It's the ebbs and flows of a baseball season. So don't get caught in it. Enjoy it. I'm not trying to take that away from you, because I'm enjoying every minute of it. It is exciting to see these young guys, and if they can continue to keep it, you know, just like it was exciting to see the young guys back in 13, 14, and 15 build something special. And if they can do that, then it's going to be great. But give them time. Don't get your expectations so high that if they go through a bad stretch, which they will, they'll have a 5-game losing streak probably this year. At least, probably. So they'll do the same thing losing-wise that they've done winning-wise here in the last 5 games. I can almost promise it. I don't know the future. I can't fully promise it, or else I would be winning a lot of money with apps on my phone, right? But the odds are this team will go through a losing streak and will have to face something like what they're doing on the winning side right now. So what I'm saying is, don't get those expectations too high, and if they falter, then you're mad and saying this team ain't any good, and you're mad at them and want to jump off the ship. Jump on the ship when you can jump on it, or the wagon, or whatever you want to call it. Jump on when you can. And, you know, for people like me, I've been on this wagon since I knew how to interpret and understand where teams were and who teams were, as I was a guy that cheered basically for Kansas City teams growing up because I had family in Kansas City. That's really where it started, and it's quote-unquote local for me, right, to cheer for the Kansas City teams because they're the closest professional sports teams to us. And, well, I guess technically I was growing up right in between Kansas City and Denver, but who's graduating or gravitating toward Denver? Come on. I mean, come on. Just having fun with some of my Bronco fans out there that I'm friends with. So, but again, you know, that's how I got into it. But jump on. If you're on, you're on. Now, I don't want you jumping on right now at 7-4 and then getting mad if they have a 5-game losing streak and you're mad that they didn't win the division because you thought they would. Right now they're second place in the division, tied with the Detroit Tigers, who are both 7-4. The Cleveland Guardians are 7-2 on the road. They're 8-3 overall. They had a winning streak that ended with a loss last night. I think the biggest thing that is, you know, popping out at me with the Royals, though, is they have a +20 run differential. Going into yesterday, or into the series, they had hit the most home runs, I believe, in the American League, and given up the fewest home runs in the American League. I think it's American League. I don't think it was Major League Baseball. Either way, when you look at those numbers, that's surprising with how many games they put at home, which is 8 out of their 11 so far. And they've still been able to hit home runs and get those out of the park. So that bodes well for some of the younger guys and what this team could do. But the plus 20 run differential, I think, is the most surprising thing with this team. And the thing that gives me probably the most hope is that they are scoring runs and they're outscoring people or teams 48 to 28 right now. They have, I need to check on the league. They do have, with the Guardians, the fewest runs against here this year. Now, the Guardians lead run differential at 34, and the Orioles are plus 21, but the Royals did get some wins against the Orioles, a win against the Orioles, if I remember right. And the Royals are right behind them at plus 20 at 7-4. Boston's plus 20, they're 7-4 as well. So I think that's probably something that sticks out, because how many years have you seen the Royals, they're just not scoring runs. And that's why they lose a lot of games, because their pitching gives up too many runs, and the team's just not scoring them. You know, how many times have we talked about Zach Greinke and even Cole Reagans to start this year, where they're not getting run support, so they're not getting wins on their record, but they're holding teams down and doing really good things. So, you know, right now the pitching is holding teams down. The offense is getting runs when they need them for the most part, and that's led to a 7-4 record with a plus 20 run differential. And, again, this is the first five game or last year the Royals did not have a – straight up even winning streak until July 30th, and on April 9th, and now going into today, April 10th, they have a five-game winning streak. So, again, there's a lot of reason to be optimistic and a lot of reason to be excited about this team, and I don't want to take that away from anybody. All I'm saying today is temper it a little bit. Enjoy this ride, but don't get so frustrated and mad if they have a five-game losing streak in a week. It's still going to take time. It's still a young team learning each other. It's still, you know, veterans from free agency that are being interspersed with a young core group. And it takes time to develop and build all that. So that's my biggest cautionary thing, is that four of these seven wins have come against the White Sox, who are now 2-7. Temper it a little bit. Understand, yes, it's great that you actually won those games when you should. Winning games you should is very, very key to having success, and that's what the Royals have done pretty much for the most part this year. You know, they've had two games, like I said, that they should have won that they let slip away. But, you know, going into those games, you don't always necessarily say, hey, they should win this game. Those two are how the game went. That's the progress of what happened during the nine-inning game. And that you should win based on that. But going in before the first inning, it's not always like, okay, we should win today. The White Sox, those are games you should win. They're coming in 1-3. You beat them the first time. You beat them the second time. Now you're feeling like, okay, yeah, this team, we should be beating every time, or at least 3 out of 4. And they got the four-game sweep, and they did what they were supposed to do in those games and got wins. So if you can do that and continue to do that, then, yeah, you're going to have a great season. Things are going to go real well for you. So, again, the Royals, 7-4. They'll play again tonight, 6:40, I believe, first pitch. Let me pull that back up. Yeah, 6:40. Seth Lugo's 1-0 with a .71 ERA and 2 starts this year for the Royals, and he'll face Spencer Arrighetti, who's making his Major League Baseball debut tonight for the Royals. Couple notes from the NBA, and then we'll talk about an unbelievable legend of a coach that has stepped down and is retiring. The NBA last night, well, first of all, talk about this. Giannis Antetokounmpo had an Achilles injury last night. He left. Tuesday night's win over the Celtics in the third quarter. After crumpling to the floor while grabbing at his left leg. There's two stories from this game that we're going to talk about, but this is the one that we wanted to update on. The Bucks initially called the injury a strain to Antetokounmpo's left soleus, which is a muscle in the back part of his calf. I read that like a comedian that I know on a podcast that I listen to. He's always like, soleus, like, did I say it right? Anyway, Doc Rivers said after the game that Antetokounmpo was undergoing an MRI exam on his calf and also would have his Achilles tendon tested. The left Achilles tendon is fully intact, so that's good news for Giannis Antetokounmpo as the Bucks star looks to return to play, and that will depend on how quickly the left calf strain does heal again for Giannis. Now, as far as the game was concerned, this was, there's a couple things that are, well, it's all related to one thing that was kind of wild in this game last night. And that is the free throw shooting. there were a total in an NBA game, in a 48-minute NBA game, a total of 2 free throws attempted. The Boston Celtics shot 0 free throws. It is the first time in NBA history that a team has not shot a single free throw in a game. The Bucks went 1 for 2. It's the fewest free throw attempts in a game since 1983, which means somebody. There was a game that had each team shoot 1 free throw at one point. If there's been other games with just 2 free throw attempts in the entire game. Because if the Celtics are the first team to not shoot a single free throw in a game, and there's been a time where there was 2, that means somebody at least shot a free throw for each team. So there's been a game, and I don't have all that in front of me. I'm just looking at the stats that were put out that I saw on a tweet. That there hasn't been a game where each team shot just 1 free throw. But the Bucks shoot 2, the Celtics shot 0, and the Bucks went 1 for 2 from the free throw line. They beat the Celtics 104-91. Boston, again, already has this Eastern Conference thing wrapped up. They've had it wrapped up for a while as far as the NBA standings are concerned. Real quickly, we'll update you on those. Boston and Milwaukee are both into the Eastern Conference playoffs already, as Boston would be the number one seed at 62-17 right now. Milwaukee would be the 2 seed at 48-31, just a game ahead of the Knicks at 47-32. Magic are in 4th place at 46-33. Cavs are 5th, 46-33. The Pacers are 6th, 46-34. Then you have the play-in spot with the Sixers, Heat, Bulls, and Hawks are 7-10. And then in the Western Conference, the Timberwolves and Nuggets both 55-24 atop the Western Conference standings. The Thunder are in 3rd at 54-25. The Clippers 4th, Mavericks 5th, Pelicans 6th. The top 5 that I mentioned, Timberwolves, Nuggets, Thunder, Clippers, and Mavericks, have all already clinched playoff spots. So then you're looking at the 7-10, the Suns, Kings, Lakers, and Warriors. The Suns, by the way, actually picked things up against the Clippers, but there was a point where they were down, I think it was like 30-4. It was 37-10 after one. They actually woke up offensively and only ended up losing by 13, 105-92. But again, the Suns would right now be in the play-in portion of the tournament. Should they stay there? I don't know what will happen. They're just a game behind the Pelicans for the 6th spot. And looks like, for the most part, those are the teams. Yeah, everybody else is eliminated there on the bottom part. So those will be the 10 teams that will be either in the playoffs or in the hunt. Top 6, T-Wolves, Nuggets, Thunder, Clippers, Mavericks, Pelicans, and then 7-10 is the Suns, Kings, Lakers, Warriors. So now it all just depends on where all those teams are going to fall as far as seeding is concerned. Rockets, Jazz, Grizzlies, Trailblazers, and Spurs have all been eliminated from playoff contention already. So that's an update on the NBA. It's wild, man. 0 free throws attempted by the Celtics in their loss last night to the Bucks. All right, we're going to wrap the sports ticket today with some news about a college women's basketball coach, Tara Vanderveer, the Stanford coach, one of the best of all time, hanging it up. She's the all-time Division I record holder for most wins on the men's or women's side with 1,216 over 45 years. She announced her retirement on Tuesday. Vanderveer led Stanford for 38 years, leading them to 14 Final Fours, 3 national titles in 1990, 92, and 2021. Vanderveer retiring, negotiations. That's a hard word for me to say apparently today because I messed it up when I was doing the sports earlier and had to fix it, right? Negotiations are underway for Kate Pay to become the next Stanford coach. She played on Vanderveer's teams from 1991 to 95 and has been a member of the Stanford staff for the past 17 seasons. So that's an update on Tara Vanderveer retiring as the head coach of the Stanford Cardinal women's basketball team. So there you go. Another coaching legend that is headed out the door. That's the sports ticket for today. Again, break out the Royals. Keep this streak going. They're 5 in a row, but don't get mad if they don't keep winning on a continually regular basis. Just bear with them. Stay with them. Stay on this ride if you're on it, and jump on when you can. And we'll take you anytime, as we did in 2014 and 15. There are a lot of Royals fans that are not Royals fans anymore, but they'll be Royals fans again if they start winning again. They know who they are. You know who you are if you're listening to me right now. But for the diehards that have been here since, well, for me, like 1980, whatever, when I figured out what sports were and what teams I should cheer for. We've been here. We've been on this bus, and we've gone through some downs, but it's fun to go through the highs. Just ask the team on the other side of the parking lot at Truman Sports Complex, Kansas City Chiefs. We're having a real fun time with them. But we hope the Royals can keep it all going. Five-game winning streak for Kansas City. We'll see if they can extend it to 6:40 tonight against the Astros in Kansas City. Have a great day, everybody.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.